You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
Moving on, let's talk about Students Advocates Group. I'm not a fan of these guys, and neither will you be after I am done here. An FTC, or Federal Trade Commission, press release named Student Advocates Group as a loan debt relief scheme that built millions out of consumers by charging illegal upfront fees and falsely promising to lower or even eliminate consumers' loan payments or balances. So basically, they're jerks. And they got hit because, according to researchers at Cyber News, they recently discovered an unsecured Amazon database that contains more than 55,000 call recordings between loan support workers and the American consumers that they were basically fleecing. And here we are. So on top of scamming in-debt students out of even more money, they now just exposed all of these students, at least 55,000 call recordings worth, to the public. And I hate people like this. I hate groups like this that prey on others. So hopefully they will get put under, and hopefully the in-debt students will get their money back and this data breach will go away for them. Moving on, let's head back up to Canada and let's talk about their CPAs, their certified professional accountants or chartered professional accountants or whatever it is, because the CPA of Canada just discovered that an unauthorized third party accessed certain personal information through a cyber attack against the CPA Canada website. This affects over 329,000 individuals, I would assume mostly Canadian, including members and other stakeholders. The information involved predominantly relates to the distribution of the CPA magazine and includes personal information like names, addresses, email addresses, employer names, etc., and all of that. Although CPA Canada is saying that passwords and credit cards were fully encrypted and therefore are okay, and hopefully that is the case. Moving on, let's talk about Kenya, or rather we're going to head to Kenya and talk about the Mount Kenya University, because their students and other Kenyan students are actually in danger of online attacks. Now, apparently, a Pakistani penetration tester discovered that the personal information about the students of MKU, Mount Kenya University, were being shared online in various hacker forums, and the data consisted of names, addresses, phone numbers, and all of this for hundreds of thousands of Kenyan students. These schools were actually notified 3 years ago by this individual from Pakistan, but they have done basically nothing to fix it. And so if you are in Kenya and you are listening to me, please talk to Mount Kenya University and make sure that they are fixing their websites and their cybersecurity. This is not anything we can be lax about. It's not a fun time. Moving on, because, oh yes, there is more. We're going to be talking about San Francisco Employees Retirement System. Now, this is the City Workers Pension Fund, and they just reported a data breach, of course, because, well, here we are. And this affects around 74,000 of their members. Now, the pension systems vendor, 10Up Inc., said that an outside party accessed a test data server with members' information on it this past February 24th, and the server was closed by 10Up Inc., and they say there's no other information that it was removed, but they couldn't really confirm it at that point. And so basically this was last, the data which was on that test server was last updated August 29th of 2018 and had things like first names, home addresses, dates of birth, beneficiary information, usernames and passwords, a whole bunch of other stuff, including tax forms. So if you have worked for the city of San Francisco or the employee retirement system, heads up to you, especially if it was before August of 2018. Moving on, let's talk about a company called Zee5. That's Zee5. They're an Indian streaming service with over 150 million subscribers worldwide, including millions here in the United States. Now, an attacker basically identifying himself or themselves as John Wick and also Korean hackers claim to have breached this system, and they are basically threatening to sell this database on criminal markets. So hopefully Zee5 will clean that up. And if you are listening to this and you use Zee5 to stream Indian television or whatever it is, heads up, you might be affected as well. Moving on, let's talk about Taiwan. The entire island of Taiwan, because sensitive personal information apparently belonging to more than 20 million Taiwanese citizens has appeared in the dark web, and this is according to a threat intelligence outfit that discovered it. And so in a blog post on May 29th, basically they found this and said it was in a known and reputable marketplace, meaning that the data was most likely very authentic. And this is obviously a very huge issue, but A spokesperson for the Ministry of Interior's department in Taiwan basically said that this was still unconfirmed and that this 3.5 gig database that contained citizens' full names, postal addresses, phone numbers, government IDs, gender and dates of birth was not actually from them. And so we shall see what happens there. But heads up, if you are listening to me from Taiwan or a Taiwanese citizen. Moving on, let's talk about Honda. Yes, that Honda car maker, motorcycle maker. They make a ton of stuff. You know what they make. I know what they make, etc. And they just came out and said Honda can confirm that a cyber attack had taken place on the Honda network. Now, they also said that the problem was affecting their ability to access their computer servers and email and internal systems and all of that. Apparently, they left open RDP or Remote Desktop Protocol, which is one of those very easy ways to get into a computer if you're, let's say, working remote or need remote access. But it's also highly insecure, and nobody should ever be running open RDP or Remote Desktop Protocol. So that's how they got into Honda. That's obviously a very serious issue. Moving on, let's talk about the city of Florence, Alabama. Apparently, in late May, they were actually warned by Brian Krebs of Krebs on Security, who is a friend of this show. Basically, they were alerted, and he's a friend in the sense that I read all of his stuff, and I've had some great conversations with him, and I was recently interviewed by him for the COVID-19 Cyber Threat Coalition. That's what I mean by friend of this show, and I'm looking to have him on sooner than later. So, Brian, if you're listening, we're going to get together soon because I want to interview you. Now, that said, Brian Krebs basically alerted numerous officials in Florence, Alabama, that their information technology systems had been infiltrated by hackers who specialize in deploying ransomware. And apparently they didn't do anything because on Friday, June 5th, they hit and locked it out. And now they are asking for $300,000 worth of Bitcoin. And city officials say they plan to pay this ransom demand in the hopes of keeping the personal data of their citizens that was stolen off the internet. So Florence, Alabama, and your citizens, good luck to you. Moving on, let's talk about Babylon Health. This is out of the UK. They suffered a data breach involving confidential patient information, for the users of its GP video consultation app that was allowing other patients to see other patients' appointments and information. Now, the breach emerged when one of its users discovered that they had access to video recordings of other patients' consultations. That's bad database programming, guys. Babylon later said that a small number of UK users could see each other's sessions and that the problem was limited to a software error and not a malicious attack. Either way, they're leaking data, and hopefully Babylon Health is going to get that straightened out. Moving on, let's head on down to Argentina and talk about Edisur SA. Now, this is one of the companies that belongs to Enel Argentina, and they basically operate energy distribution in the city of Buenos Aires. And like Honda, they had an exposed remote desktop server that got hit with a specific industrial ransomware called ECANS or ECONS. And this is one that we have seen rise in the last, a month or three. So heads up to you. That is obviously a very, very serious issue. And there have been so many others out here. You know, just as I'm looking at the time, I want to make sure that we're moving on to everything else we've got to do. But Postbank South Africa, 12 million bank cards or credit cards have to be replaced after they got hit. That's going to cost them 1 million of their currency of rand. That's basically $58.7 million U.S. currency. Genworth Financial, Fortune 500 mortgage and long-term care insurer here in the United States, got hit as well. So if you use them, please take a look. And finally, I want to talk about a company called Tait, T-A-I-T. They're a live event solution provider, and basically somebody gained access to their servers and email accounts and got a whole bunch of information. But here's why I wanted to end with this, because it is interesting, because Tait has worked on 17 of the top 20 highest grossing concert tours of all time. Its clients include NASA. Again, NASA's having a bad month. Disney, Universal, Nike, Metallica, U2, MTV, the Olympics, Eurovision, the Rolling Stones, AC/DC, and many others. So if you ever wanted Bono's home phone number, you might be able to find it in the dark web now. And those were your breaches for the last month. And I didn't even get to all of them. Those were the highlights. My God. So hopefully you are safe and secure. And we'll see where we go.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for the deep dive segment, where we take a closer and deeper look at a cybersecurity, cyber warfare, or technology issue around us. And if you have any suggestions for a deep dive segment or something you'd like me to dive into, you can once again find me on Facebook and Twitter at NickAESP. Again, that's NickAESP. Or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. That's questions@securityfanatics.com. I am more than happy to take a look at it. And if it meets our standards, we are more than happy to do a deep dive on it. So let's begin.
Hey, everybody. Nick Espinoza from the COVID-19 Cyber Threat Coalition. And I am here today with a very special guest, and I'm actually very excited to talk to her. I am talking to Jen Miller Osborne. Now, if you don't know who she is the Deputy Director of Threat Intelligence for Unit 42 of Palo Alto Networks. And Jen, how are you doing today?
I am doing great. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. I'm good. Soon to be the weekend.
So. I'm glad it's Friday. Yeah, very glad it's Friday. Yes,
it has been quite the week, I think, in America in general, and with that, I'm very glad that you were able to join me here on this Friday afternoon. And so with that, let's dive right in, because I think some of the audience is not going to know exactly what Unit 42 of Palo Alto Networks is. And so can you enlighten us?
Sure. So Unit 42 is the threat intelligence team within Palo Alto Networks. We're unique from a lot of our other teams in that we are solely tasked with doing research and ensuring that our customers are then protected against it. So we work very, very closely with all of our product teams, but we're not tied into that kind of development lifecycle that would usually go along with having to do that kind of work. So that lets us do, you know, if we need to do a longer term project that's going to take a couple of months, we can do it. And when new things happen, like when a lot of attackers turn around and start using all the COVID themes as lures and decoys and domains, we were able to kind of jump on and pivot onto that relatively quickly. We're not a really big team. There's about 40 of us, and we're kind of spread all over the globe. But that also gives us some flexibility with being aware of different situations. And yeah, our job is basically just to stop bad guys. So another part of how we do that is our blog and the playbooks that we publish. And that's because we feel that threat intelligence should be shared freely so that the most number of people who can make use of it can use it. How you then protect against it is kind of the secret sauce or the magic or whatever. Having the knowledge itself doesn't necessarily, you know, you need, the defenses are harder to create. So right. We share that right. So we can have, everyone can be aware of what the current threat landscape looks like. Like my mom can go read about it if she wants to see what's going on. You know, other customers can go read about it to see how they're protected and what we're seeing. Competitors can go read about it and ingest it themselves and have an idea of what we're seeing. We just feel that's really the best approach to do a sort of herd immunity kind of overarching goal. The more people that can roll out protections and be aware, the more protected we all are.
Yeah. Well, and I know we read it over here as well. I mean, for me, I wake up every morning and I've got a dedicated daily reading, and Unit 42 is one of those ones I always check,
awesome.
Which is why I'm kind of geeked out to have you here as well. Cause I think you're doing the Cyber Lord's work.
nice Cyber Lord. I haven't heard that one before.
There you go. That's my own personal Lord in cybersecurity and all of that. But since Unit 42 is on the front lines, then looking at the bleeding edge of threats out there daily and worldwide, since you're scattered all over the place, you know, can you tell us some of the latest threats that Unit 42 in Palo Alto is catching?
So the biggest thing that we've seen lately, especially that was a shift, was when all of the attackers started leveraging anything COVID related for attacks. And it was unprecedented because we'd never seen basically every attacker start taking advantage of the same thing. You know, typically, because it was a global pandemic, they were able to leverage everyone's anxiety and everyone's fear instead of it being typically what we would see where it's more targeted to, you know, news or politics or some sort of local disaster in a given region. And that included all of the criminals we saw shifting to, who typically did the types of spam where it's, you know, your Amazon package or your order or your credit card, this, all of them shifted to that as well. And a lot of other scammers shifted to that. So we saw a massive uptick in just scam websites that were offering people everything, anything, like anything that they thought people might be interested in. And in some cases, they might have actually gotten some sort of product. It was never what they expected. But in most cases, all they were doing was losing their PII and their credit card information and all that kind of stuff. So that's really been one of the biggest shifts I've probably ever seen. And I've been doing this for about 20 years. So it was but it's starting to scale off now. It seems to have hit kind of, at least from our visibility, sort of peak saturation at this point for a while. We're starting to see attackers returning to using different kind of themes and lures to go after people. But yeah, this was just totally unprecedented. It was crazy. I know obviously we worked together right. on the league, so you totally understand how it just, yeah.
Yeah.
It was amazing to see how this community came together though. Like that was one of my favorite things, was to see like people from all over the world joining and jumping in together in like the Slack channels and sharing information, including with law enforcement to go after stuff. That was also unprecedented, I feel. But it was an awesome unprecedented.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, you know, in that vein, I mean, we are more than 4,000 members in the coalition, you know, actively working together to try to keep everything safe. And what's interesting too, is I think just the entire cybersecurity community had to take a step back when this hit, like you're saying, everybody, like every media from, you know, Podunk, wherever to the New York Times is all about the coronavirus and what you should do, you know, and I don't care what country you're in, everybody knew about it. And so how could, you know, an attacker not look at that and say, well, everybody's talking about this, so this is clearly the, you know, the best place to throw my lures out there. And, you know, I think that's absolutely right. You know, and in that vein, I mean, we have a lot of frontline infrastructure like hospitals and all of that. And by virtue of that, Palo Alto Networks has a massive presence in, you know, various governments around the globe, healthcare systems, et cetera, et cetera. And since the pandemic seems to have just ramped up these threats, as we were talking about, against these kinds of institutions, not to mention all the remote working, you know, that's going on and all of that. And a lot of people are rushing to that. And I could tell you horror stories that I've been called in on the last couple of months. Can you tell us how Palo Alto Networks and Unit 42 are adapting to meet the demands of these attacks?
Sure. So in addition to all of the research that we've published, which is 6 blogs on just COVID themed attacks we saw in various kinds of places, which is the most we have ever written on a given subject like that. Wow. Like that, it's just a ton of research covering everything, you know, from cloud environments where this was happening, all the way through talking about all of the domains that were registered and scam websites. We saw an interesting thing where Silver Terrier, which is typically Nigerian cyber criminals, they actually started using it to try to make money as well, which was kind of an interesting adaptation for them to do.
Right.
And as a company, what we did, since obviously we're in a position where securing remote workforce, that's part of what we do. Like that's a big part of our business. Mm. So what we did, in addition to in addition to everything our customers currently had access to, we started offering things for people that weren't current customers, that required enhancements for customers that perhaps hadn't really gotten to the remote workforce component yet, or that hadn't really been part of their typical business plan. Mm-hmm. And what we started doing was we were offering free deployment services. And that means that when you bought, you know, one of our next generation firewalls or things, you automatically got an actual person to help you make sure you were implementing everything correctly, which is typically something that is a separate kind of paid thing. But we wanted to make sure, as people were kind of trying to ramp up really quickly into the space, we wanted to help them do it as safely and as best as possible. So we offered that for free. Existing customers that had our Prisma access got free additional licensing if they needed to expand it, now that they had so many more people working outside the office than they typically did. Okay. And then we also extended a free global protect trial to anyone that didn't currently have it, to try to protect their remote workers. So we took all of the things that we typically, you know, sell, or we productize more, and we, in an effort to ensure our customers were protected, or to ensure even people that weren't our customers, if they wanted to come with us now, to help them get set up securely and safely as quickly as they possibly could.
No, and I think that's great, you know, and it's one of those things I think that a lot of organizations need help with, especially if, you know, they've got, let's say, they're soon to be up on renewals, you know, I'm sure that helps with that. And I can just say from personal experience and, you know, working, you know, with Palo Alto Firewalls in the past, you know, it's a college course to set up one of these compared to some of the other firewalls or competitors out there. And so having that service, especially in a time where we are seeing just a massive amount of attacks, you know, come on. I just was talking to a recent CISO from a health system who said they were seeing a roughly 30,000% increase in phishing, you know, so that is
depressing.
It is.
Really? That's what you're going to target? Like,
honestly,
come on.
You know,
almost literally anything else.
Okay. Yeah. I know. Well, it's such an easy way. It's the largest delivery system that we've had in threat, you know, and it's not stopping, you know, and all of that. And I think that actually kind of dovetails into the next question that I had for you, because obviously one of the biggest issues we're seeing, you know, is that much of these cyber attacks, they're phishing or ransomware or whatever they are coming against infrastructure, and they're coming from foreign countries oftentimes. And we've been seeing that. That's not new to the coronavirus situation, but it is obviously being wrapped up, whether it's state-sponsored actors or just groups or, you know, that 400-pound fat guy in New Jersey, you know, whatever that is, you know. So can you comment on where Unit 42 or Palo Alto is seeing a lot of this activity coming from?
Sure. So we actually don't really look at it on a country basis necessarily, just because we have customers or potential customers anywhere, basically.
Sure, of course.
Right. So it's difficult for us to look at it that way. One of the things we use to determine maliciousness, especially when we're looking at some of the domains in the IP space, is whether or not they're a bulletproof hosting provider. Mm-hmm. Because 98% of bulletproof hosting tends to be malicious in some way, shape, or form, because that's what the criminals prefer to use.
Right.
Because they offer those. For people that don't know what the bulletproof component means, it means that you're typically paying in some sort of Bitcoin or other digital currency, and they aren't keeping records of who you are or what you're doing with your website. So it's really, really popular for criminals because the companies basically give them a shield.
Zero
log. So anything we see coming from that space is more, that's kind of the way we look at it more. We try to look at it a little bit more broadly, because we can't, you know, say this coming from this X country is bad.
Right. Right. No. And I get that, you know, and obviously, you know, I could be sitting here in the United States and make myself look like I'm coming from anywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, I just didn't know, just given, you know, what unit, you know, 42 is, having, you know, an insider's look compared to most of the
changes,
planet, you know,
all the time, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, it totally changes just based on their, whoever their provider is. It, you know, 1 month it could be, we're seeing a ton coming from the United States. I mean, we've had a couple of things where we published a lot of the things were posted in the States or seem to be coming through there, you know, and then the next month it's Germany. The next month it's somewhere else. Like, it's not really consistent.
No, not the Germans. I can't believe that.
Or people pretending they're in Germany. So.
Fair enough. There it is. Just being part German myself. There you go.
Me too.
So, yeah, there you go. My shirt actually says Germany on it. I don't think you can.
Oh, nice.
There you go. Obviously, you know, we also know that just overall, you know, cyber attacks have been increasing. You know, every year is the worst year ever for data breach, you know, record count and on and on and on and on. And, you know, I talk to a lot of clients and I'm on stage talking about that quite a bit, you know, but, you know, in terms of this pandemic, you know, I'm sure you guys are seeing that it's increasing faster, probably through the pandemic, than it has before. You know, are you guys starting to see that, like, taper off? Is it still exploding? Like, what are you guys seeing? And obviously, we have a new news cycle that's been dominated for the last week or two with the just incredibly unfortunate incident, you know, with George Floyd and all of that. You know, so what are you guys seeing in terms of that increase as it happens over time?
We definitely saw a massive uptick immediately once this happened, say starting January-ish is when we really started to see things ramp up. And it kind of peaked like March-April. And then since then we started to see kind of a downward trend in just the popularity of anything COVID related to use for attacks. They're starting to either use other current events, or they're going back to their old typical, you know, hey, your Amazon package was delivered kind of thing.
Right. No longer UPS. Now it's Amazon.
Yes.
Interesting how that evolved.
Package, like,
right. Yeah. Right. Now, from what I understand, and I want to shift gears a little bit to the coalition here and you know, how we are working behind the scenes, if you will, with Palo Alto Networks. From what we understand, Palo Alto is actually ingesting our block list that we've been putting out here. And so I'd be curious to know, how do Palo Alto customers use the threat intelligence that our coalition is supplying to Palo Alto, and obviously, you know, the thousands of others that are ingesting our block list at the moment?
We use it to augment all of our DNS security products, basically. So we use it to enhance our block list, and then we rolled into that, and then, you know, once that goes into production, that it's pushed out to everybody within 5-10 minutes. So we ingest them, and then it's pretty easy to ingest, you know, IPs and domains and things like that, especially when we know they've been vetted and they're bad. So we really just roll them into production pretty much as soon as we get them.
So with that, I want to thank you for your time here, because this has been like super cool. And I think it's just really interesting to see what the front lines are seeing and how you guys are reacting to that. And I know you're one of those big presences out there in critical infrastructure. So it's really good to have that perspective. And thank you very much, for being with us, today. I really appreciate that. Now, that said, if anybody wants to follow you or Unit 42 or Palo Alto Networks, feel free
to plug. They should. I mean,
I'm not saying no. I it's daily reading for me. If you publish daily, I always check. How can people find you or Unit 42 or Palo Alto Networks?
Sure. So our blog website it's really long, but it's unit42.paloaltonetworks.com. Or you can just Google Unit 42 and it'll come up. We are not the Dutch television show. You'll notice there's a little E after it. We're not them. It's the Palo Alto Networks website. And then we also have a Twitter handle. It's unit42_intel. If you want to follow that, we also make sure we push all of our blogs out with tweets whenever we publish. And obviously our parent website is paloaltonetworks.com.
Great, great. Well, again, Jen, thank you very much for joining me, and I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. This is fun.
And thank you so much for tuning in this week. It was another fun show, and I think we covered a lot of really good stuff, and I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. It was a really good time, and I hope you keep tuning in. Thank you very much for listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show here with Nick Espinoza. And if you have any comments, suggestions, questions, absolutely anything, once again, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. And you can always send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. Don't be shy. I love the feedback. We've been having a great time with the show. And as always, stay safe and stay online, everyone. Thanks for listening.